Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Knowles podcast and follow at Front Row Knowles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank studios.
Welcome back to Front Row Knowles. Thanks to Adam Fuller joining us last segment. Thanks to you for tuning in and finding us here on Real Talk 93.3. We're going to reopen that Earl Bacon Agency hotline, the Earl Bacon Agency, ensuring your future together. Say hello to our good friend Bob Ferrante from the Osceola. Bob, how are you, sir?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We're well. We're a week and a half away from playing some football. Notre Dame opener. Tickets still available. I'll remind our listeners, if you don't have yours yet, go ahead and secure them. Let's start there, Bob. It's been a while since we've seen an electric atmosphere at the stadium for an FSU game. And I don't know that it's going to get to be a sellout, but it's still going to be a better representation than what we've seen in some time. So that part should be fun.
It feels like it has that buildup throughout the offseason, the excitement, the curiosity. I think we're all kind of wondering how various position groups and players are going to look. I think there's that kind of excitement that it's not maybe similar to 2011 with Oklahoma or 2014 with Notre Dame, but this feels like a truly big, you know, season opening home game for Florida State and the fans to come back, some of them for the first time since 2019.
Yeah, it's not necessarily they're excited about what the prospects for the season are. They're just excited to finally be back outdoors somewhere as a group.
Where's the tailgate, right?
Yep. It reminds me of the Virginia Tech opener, honestly, which was a Monday night, kind of you're one of the only games out there. This is Sunday night, so you are the only game out there. Hopefully a better result. And obviously it's not Coach Norvell's first game since he coached last year. Speaking of Coach Norvell, you know, we've spent all fall trying to say, okay, who's the starting quarterback? Who's starting at this position? Not that we haven't seen Norvell on the sideline, but as you've observed practice here, what have you seen from he and his staff in terms of how they coach and teach day to day?
I think that's been one of the neat things for this, you know, 2 weeks of camp or two plus weeks now is we've had the opportunity that Coach Norvell's opened up practices to us, with the exception of the two scrimmages. You know, we've been able to watch some of these periods on the field, a lot of them, you know, from the concourse to the baseball stadium and just kind of get a nice bird's eye view of really this staff and how much they love to teach. It's really a teaching staff. It's evident just in how they go about everything. I would say nearly every 5 minute period is very efficient, fast moving, the tempo. There's not a lot of sitting around, not a lot of downtime. And there are downtime for breaks, nutrition and hydration, of course. It's August, but this coaching staff is really bringing energy, very engaged. I think they're trying to be leaders. They're trying to find leaders. They're coaching guys. It's not quick little reminders. It's extended conversations that we're seeing at times, I think, are really neat. You know, Coach Norvell, if he pulls a player aside, it's not a 5 second and the player runs down the sideline to get ready for the next play. It can be 30 seconds, 45 seconds. It can be an extended teaching moment, an opportunity for Norvell to really connect with a player. You know, you hear his voice, you hear Kenny Dillingham's voice, John Papuchis, his voice too on special teams, huge special teams emphasis out of this coaching staff, more than we've seen on past staff. So, yeah, I think you're kind of seeing that really hands-on nature of these guys, and you have to hope it pays off on the football field too.
The two things we've been didn't see, is player development. And obviously shorthanded last year with the amount of time they could spend. I mean, this is really, we mentioned a little bit of this with Coach Fuller, and he wasn't biting my comment. He wasn't having any excuses. He wasn't going to make up any excuses. But this is really the first season that Norvell's been able to do what he wants to do.
I agree. You have to almost put an asterisk by last year. It happened. We all saw it. But it was a COVID year. There's no strength and conditioning, lots of challenges. But this year is really their chance to set the tone for the entire program for years and years moving forward. I think it's a good opportunity. They're doing the best they can with it. Sorry, my voice is at a breaking point here. But guys, I think I think what we're going to see is a more organized team. I think a team that kind of knows what it's supposed to do as far as alignment. We have seen some pre-snap issues and penalties, but I think there's just a better awareness as far as year two. Guys are more comfortable in what they're doing. So I think those are things that are real positives. Players know what's expected of them. They know what the standard is. And those are positives.
I know I've been in the camp. I think we all have been that Mackenzie Milton was going to be the starting QB, and Coach Norville, matter of fact, Monday night at his first call-in show of the year, before the call-in show, it was a party for sponsors of the radio network with Learfield. He said, I'll tell you what, I know everybody wants to know who the starting quarterback is going to be, so I'm just going to go ahead and announce that right now. And then he paused and he said, no, I'm going to hold that. I'm going to keep that pretty close to the vest for a while. So we all know that he's not going to let the cat out of the bag. But my question to you is, I've seen with my own eyes, I've heard a lot of others make comments that Jordan Travis has really taken a step forward. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I think with Jordan, it's the bonus is not necessarily weight gain, because if you look at where he's listed on the roster, it's not that. It's, to me, it's more mechanics, strength and conditioning. His arm strength is noticeably better. His downfield passing, I know a lot of people will say, well, it wasn't really evident all that often last year. It's really evident this year. He's very accurate. I think on the downfield passes, connecting as best he can with these receivers, and they're trying to work on that chemistry. We're seeing some guys that just, you know, they are missing that kind of rhythm in the long passing game. But I think Jordan has been really good as far as taking guys under his wing, working with receivers, tight ends. It's definitely an improved quarterback. If you're just saying from December of 2020 to now, it's definitely an improved quarterback.
I think those that I have talked to, and you can echo or disagree, still say that, you know, improvement needed on the offensive line, but progress has been made. Maybe not as much as needed, but there has been an upward trajectory there.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm a buyer in terms of this team can run. This team has run blockers, and with a mobile quarterback, you've got advantages. Like, and Jordan Travis gives you that. Question is, how do you pass protect? I think your best option, and what we've seen in a lot of scenarios, is you've got Maurice Smith at center. You've got the two transfer guards on the inside in Love Taylor and Dylan Gibbons. You're strong on the inside. Developing tackles on the outside, you're going to have to use a tight end like Jordan Wilson or a Jayshon Corbin, a running back, to kind of chip and to buy some time on those outside pass rushers. You're going to have to do a few things similar to mass protection, similar to just kind of using the sum of your parts so you can buy a little extra time. You just got to be creative, honestly. I do think this offensive line is better, though, in year two for Coach Atkins.
Well, and you just mentioned Jordan Travis is better. So even if it's Jordan, it's a step forward there. There's been a lot of positivity about the running backs, particularly Jayshon Corbin, who got singled out by the coaches after the first scrimmage. And remember that when he got to FSU, he was coming off an injury too. Keyshawn Helton looks quicker. I mean, is it fair to say every segment group, tight ends got Jordan Wilson back, is at least marginally better or somewhat better than a year ago? Or do we need to see Saturday's first?
I would say on paper, the answer is yes. Especially with the offensive line and defensive line, we won't know until September 5th. But I think we're seeing guys, like you said, recovering from injuries. There's more depth at receiver. There's more talent developing at tight end. Defensive front, I feel like depth is there. Linebacker, depth is there. Cortez Andrews from Godby, another talent to watch, I think. A guy's walking on, but I think he's a guy who can play too. Yeah.
It's Bob so is- good, Tom. It's so good that Bob is breaking up. I mean, he is in tears of joy talking about the improvement of this club.
It's like he's the one out there screaming at the players all day. He's lost his voice here midway through camp.
I feel like Dillingham. I feel like I don't know what it is. But I'm excited for football. Maybe it's that too, football fever.
What about the thing nobody wants to talk about, Bob? Special teams. And when I say that, when you say special teams could be a strength, I think people immediately go to, well, that must mean the offense and defense aren't very good if that's where we're going. So that aside, and we'll see what happens with the offense and defense. Might it be a strength? Is there a reason that I do think that, that John Papuchis does a really good job with the segment, and I think the return game is going to be improved. I don't know that I'm going to have confidence in the place kicking until I see it on Saturday, but what have you seen?
Punting has been really consistent. Kicking has been really consistent. They spend a ton of time on returns and coverages. I think they know special teams can win them games. If you've got to win at least two phases, you've got to win special teams to make it happen. I think they know what they can do. That's a difference-making opportunity for them on special teams, for sure.
So are you ready for a prediction time yet, or no, we're going to wait
another
week?
No, he saves that for next week, Tommy. Okay. Don't get ahead of the script.
Okay. Hey, soccer team, anything else on football, Keith? I'll switch real quick.
No, soccer's out of the gates.
Yeah, soccer's 2-0 already. Looks, when you return 10 of 11 starters from a team that should have won the national title last year, it looks like they're every bit as good this year through a very small sample size. What do you think?
I think they're ready to take the SEC title so far. I mean, if they knock off Florida, it's all over. They're off to a great start. And, you know, this is a typical Krikorian team. Lots of veterans and newcomers. Fun to watch them play. I think, you know, we'll see how the season plays out, but they're playing like the number one team in the nation.
Volleyball is picked fifth in the ACC. They've always been in contention and into the postseason generally under Chris Poole. Any nuggets on that team? They start play soon.
I think Coach Poole knows this is sort of a rebuilding team. He's got a couple of returning pieces, but it's a group that's loaded with freshmen. Those freshmen didn't get to play in the spring, so he's kind of going to have to see how the pieces fit together this fall.
Gotcha. All right. He is Bob Ferranti. He is our Osceola insider. Bob, we'll let you go get some throat lozenges there. Tea, hot tea, perhaps. We can get our good friend Gene Deckerhoff on the line to help you with that voice if need be.
I'm going to work on some cough drops. I think that's the radio man's best friend.
Our Osceola insider, I'll remind you folks to go ahead and log on to the Osceola. You can get a monthly membership for just $6.95 a month or $74.95 a year. Appreciate it, sir.
Take care.
Thanks, Bob.
We'll catch up again next week. Still one more segment to go. Stay with us here on Front Row Knowles.
Hi, I'm Bob Hobbs. We're always talking about getting your best deals, your best trade, and your best financing. But with these challenging times, we wanted you to know, if you can't make it in, we'll even bring the car to you, and we'll appraise your vehicle at your home or business. And for all our service customers that can't make it in, we'll pick up your vehicle, get it serviced, and bring it back to you. We just want to make it easy to do business. We appreciate our customers and want to say thank you for your business. So whether it's sales or service, come by and see us or check us out at HobsonChevrolet.com. Buy and service your vehicle the Hobson way.
Getting the kids to practice on time. Remembering if it's your day to bring snacks. Making it to the game with a clean jersey. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with Auto Owners, insurance doesn't have to be one of them. Auto Owners works with independent agents who answer when you call, so you can worry about more important things, like whether your kid is going to run toward first or third base. That's simple human sense.
Your local independent Auto Owners agent is the Earl Bacon Agency. Call us at 878-2121 or visit us on the web at earlbacon.com.
Front Row Knowles is presented by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way. And by the Earl Bacon Agency, ensuring your future together. Now back to Tom and Keith.
Welcome back to Front Row Knowles, Tom and KJ, as we wrap things up. Keith, Bob, he almost needs to go on the shelf for a little bit. What do you think?
Well, he's certainly struggling through camp, so maybe he needs, what do they call them, rest days? What's the term they use now?
Oh, well, they're managing workload. He needs to manage
managing workload. He needs to manage his workload a little bit.
We'll relay that message to Jerry on his behalf. Appreciate him joining us, as always. A few minutes to clean things up. Anything resonate from what Coach Fuller shared? First of all, Keith?
Well, I think he balked at my question about last year being a do-over, and I understand that coaches should do that. But I think if he would be brutally honest, and I think if Mike would be brutally honest, they were so handicapped with what they had to do last year, both in terms of evaluating and putting people in the right place having time to coach them. And then we forget about the fact, at least on the defensive side, in terms of Coach Fuller, they had some injuries. I mean, you know, they had to have Akeem Dent at a cornerback. They didn't have enough bodies. They had to play, you know, some of the outside linebackers inside and some of the inside linebackers outside, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So now they've had a spring. First of all, the winter workouts and a full spring, and then whatever tools they have available to use, extra tools, and in a full camp, at least by all accounts. I know there's been some kids that have been held out for contact tracing and some other COVID-related stuff that appropriately the program hasn't talked about. But they certainly have had more access and ability to work with the kids and evaluate this year than last year. And that was the reason for my suggestion that this is kind of the first year. But, you know, coaches don't ever want to make excuses. So he wasn't buying into it. And I understand that.
Let's go back to what we touched on at the end of the first segment, Keith, because we didn't have any chance to flush it out. But you made the point as it relates to the COVID testing protocols. Well, yes, the testing protocols, but the ones that are required based on where your vaccination rate is. And simply put, once you get to 85% of the team, then anybody unvaccinated only needs to be tested once a week instead of three times per week. Correct. So that right there means that your expense for testing is getting cut by 2/3, and that's not insignificant for FSU or any other school. And that's go ahead.
And if you're vaccinated, you don't have to quarantine if you're exposed. If you're unvaccinated and you have contact, you've got to quarantine for a period of time. So there's a lot of things there, money included, but a lot of other things that 85% will do for you.
Well, and there's a lot of concern that I've seen. Nobody wants to obviously to have a forfeit. So you want to see Florida State get to that 85% rate, which I'm told that they will get there. They're on track. May not be for Notre Dame, but they're going to get to the 85% mark. Here's the thing I was going to say that's different from last year, Keith. Last year, there were strict guidelines in place that dictated whether you could play a game or not. In other words, you had to have 7 offensive linemen available, and you had to have X amount of quarterbacks and X amount of receivers. All that has gone by the wayside. It's now up to an individual school to determine that we don't have enough guys to play, or we do. Now, I'm not suggesting that a coach would go into a game with only 5 offensive linemen available, but if you only had 3 receivers and the rest of the team was good, i.e. COVID made its way through the receiving segment room, you could still play the game and just be heavy on the run. I mean, the ball is not in the ACC's court on this now. It's on the individual schools to make that determination.
Agreed. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be some fallout. There'll be a situation or two that gets second-guessed. But, you know, last year there were 20 and 30 situations that got guessed. And therefore, again, repeating, getting to that 85% threshold, you know, you can't make kids do things, but you can make kids do things, if you follow my train of thought there. I mean, there's just got to be a push to get that done. And as you say, I have not heard, but evidently you have, that all signs point to there. You don't get there, and you've got way more problems than your opponents that do.
Going back to the other thing we talked about up top, this alliance from Big Ten, Pac-12, ACC, it's what we thought it was. I don't see a lot of meat there. One of the commissioners actually commented yesterday that revenue was not the driving force. I thought revenue was the driving force in everything college athletics did, Keith.
It is on everything of importance, so maybe this isn't as important as it's being made to be.
Oh, no, it's the driving force on everything that involves revenue, so that's my point. Right now, I don't think there's revenue involved in this per se. It did strike me as odd that there's no written agreement. There's no signed agreement, which is sort of like they're flirting with each other, but they're not going to put a ring on the finger, which leads me to believe that, you know, this is a good arrangement for the 3 conferences until one of us finds a better arrangement. And then that's the arrangement we're going to proceed with.
Or until one of them doesn't like what the rest of them are doing because you went out with Sally on the night you were supposed to go out with Susie, or vice versa.
Yeah, I don't blame them. I think it's good to look at this. I do think it's more about voting for the Big Ten. To the question, why would the Big Ten need the Pac-12 and ACC? Because we forget the Big Ten is still getting more money than the SEC and probably will be in the long run because they're about to redo their contract. The answer to this is the Big Ten wants to protect the Rose Bowl.
The Rose Bowl, exactly.
And they've got, on top of the Big Ten and the Pac-12, to vote in favor of making that a quarterfinal game. They've got the ACC aligned to vote in favor of it. And the ACC, in turn, will get those two leagues to vote in favor of keeping the Orange Bowl for an ACC school and making that a quarterfinal. So, I mean, that's what it comes down to at the end of the day, as best I can tell.
And the scheduling part, simply because of the way nature of the way these contracts are, even if they were absolutely in total agreement that they wanted to implement scheduling, they can't do that for 5 or 7 or in some cases 10 years out. Because, you know, a school's not going to add another big name opponent when they've already got 10 of them between conference and rivalry games already under contract. They're not going to go to 11. And so it'll be a while before those other contracts are fulfilled and there's openings to do something from a scheduling standpoint on the football side. Now, in basketball, that may be a little quicker.
Yeah, basketball, they could maybe be a little bit more nimble there. But basketball, as we know, I mean, if you look at the TV contracts, it's maybe 15% of the dollars associated with the TV contracts, and 85% is football. So, I mean, you could add Duke, UCLA, and, you know, FSU against a power in the Big Ten, whoever you want to pick. It's not going to move the needle enough.
Not enough. You're correct.
All right. Well, someday when we're in charge, Keith, we'll solve these problems. I don't have the answer.
We've established that with our listeners. They are well aware of the fact that we are certainly capable of being kings of college athletics. Just give us the opportunity.
Thank you to Adam Fuller for joining us today for a few minutes. We appreciate Bob Ferrante from the Osceola, and we appreciate you as well. If you haven't done so, subscribe to our podcast. We're on all the platforms now, and join us each and every Wednesday right here on Real Talk 93.3. From 12 to 1. Keith, I've got nothing else to add. Do you, sir?
I be done.
Keith's done. We're done. We'll talk to you again next week. And guess what, folks? Next week is actually a game week as we count down to Florida. No, not quite. Almost. But we're closer, right, Keith?
Yes, yes, yes.
I jumped by a week. Anyway, we're getting closer. Talk to you next week on Front Row Noles.